morning. Today's daf in Kedushin, Samech Beis. We started yesterday the sugya on Samech Aleph Amud Aleph, on the sugya tonight kafel. Thank Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on Lezech Nishmas Libe Gabriel Bashmuel. The sugya of tonight kafel is a sugya in which there is a simple question, and that is, when I say the positive, do you infer the negative? And Mechlal Hain Atosha Me'alav or E'atosha Me'alav? So do I, if I make a stipulation and I throw in a condition, and all I simply say is, you know, if you do this, then the following is going to happen. And then what does that automatically imply, that if you don't do this, then it's not going to happen? So this is really the fundamental issue regarding the Tanai Kafel. So what do we know? We know that in the Torah there was a stipulation that was made specifically by Moshe to B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven. The negotiation was over what the Gemara here refers to as Eretz Galad. Eretz Galad, which also we refer to as Eivor HaYarden, that is the east side of the Jordan River, where upon encampment over there, so B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven look around, they like what they see, they're not in Eretz Yisrael yet, they turn to Moshe and they say, hey, can we have this? This is good. We like this. We have a Mikna Rav, we have a lot of flock, and we would like to keep this land over here. To which...
What does it belong to? How can Moshe give it away?
Okay, yeah, you're asking questions. I don't have all the answers. So anyway, so he says, can we have this? I mean, they conquered the land. They did conquer the land. I mean, it was. I'm with you. I don't have all the answers. So they said, can we have this? So Moshe Rabbeinu looked at them and said, well, wait one second. The plan is to go into Eretz Yisrael and conquer Eretz Yisrael. You're not excusing yourself from that. So then Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, so here's what we're going to do. If you go in with us and you help us conquer Eretz Yisrael, so then you got the land. But then Moshe didn't stop there. He then also went on to say, now if you don't go in with us, right, so if you don't go with us and help us conquer, so you're not going to get the land. You'll get part of Eretz Yisrael, but you're not going to get this land. Okay, so what Moshe Rabbeinu had to do was go over both the positive implication and the negative as well. So this bodes well for Shitas Rav Meir. We learned yesterday in the Mishnah, Shitas Rav Meir is that from here you learn out that whenever you make it tonight, whenever you make a condition, you have to say both the positive and the negative. It has to be a Tanai Kafel. Okay, and then as we're going to be spending a lot of time this morning discussing, Rabbi Chanina disagrees with the opinion of Rav Meir. And we'll discuss more of Rabbi Chanina in just a moment. A couple of points regarding Rav Meir. Just a reminder of what we learned yesterday in Rashi. Rashi told us that there are many considerations regarding Tanai Kafel. Rashi highlights three of these considerations. Number one, if you're Rav Meir and you subscribe to Tanai Kafel, that means three things, says Rashi. Number one, you need Hain Kodem Lalav. That's later. You need a hain and a lav. In other words, you need to repeat. If you do this, great. And if you don't do this, then it's no good. You need kfeila. You need repetition. Two, Rashi says, the tanai has to become lamaisa. The condition has to be before the action. Meaning, it has to be an if-then. Not a then-if. And that's very intuitive. Meaning, whenever you make a condition, if you want to be serious about the condition, you have to throw the condition first, and then afterwards, the consequence comes afterwards. That's the second part of Rashi. And the third point that Rashi makes is hein kodem lalav. Now I can say it. And that is, the positive has to come before the negative. And if the negative is before the positive, so then you do not have a tanai kafel. So these are the three points. Rashi then also says, very interestingly, that even though there's a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina, Rashi says they're only arguing about point number one, about the kfeila, but they're not arguing about the other two points. Tosos disagrees on this. Tosos, second to last Tosos on the Amud, says no, that's not correct. They are arguing over all three points. Okay, and that's another prat in this machlokas between Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina. Just one other point. I didn't mention this yesterday. It's worth mentioning. First of all, I already made the observation yesterday that we've gone through a number of Mishnayos with conditions. And in the Mishnayos didn't go through the Tanai Kafel. So I guess what you'll have to say is that if you subscribe to Rav Meir's viewpoint, which obviously Rav Meir does, and Stam Mishnah's Rav Meir, so the Tanai Kafel's there. It's just, you know, the Mishnah's not spelling it all out. You'll say that, you'll have to say something along those lines. But the interesting point is the Rambam. The Rambam quotes the Gaonim. The Gaonim are of the opinion that the Tanai Kafel requirement is only by Kedushin, Gittin, only by issues of Isser Heter. So the Rambam says, a couple places, Rambam says, no, that can't be. Meaning a Tanai Kafel requirement is ubiquitous. Meaning either you need the Tanai Kafel requirement or you don't need the Tanai Kafel requirement. And if you're subscribing to the Tanai Kafel requirement, so then it should be Kedushin, Gittin, Mamonos, meaning, and all different forms of Kinyanim. And the Rambam says, and proof positive to that is, what is the source of Tanai Kafel? B'nei Gad, B'nei Reuven. B'nei Gad, B'nei Reuven, they're talking land acquisition. They're not talking about Kedushin, they're not talking about Gittin. So that's just it's an interesting machlokas over there. Obviously the Gaonim feel that, the Gaonim know that. And obviously the Gaonim have, you know, you have to do analysis in terms of what how do the Gaonim learn up our entire sugya. All right. With all that stated, so let's go back. Let's resume. So the Mishnah brought in the Machlokas. We did the Mishnah yesterday with the Rashi. The Mishnah brought in the Machlokas between Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. And again, to easily distill the entire discussion, it basically goes like this. According to Rav Meir, Mechlal Hein Iyat Hashemei Alav. I can't deduce the negative from the positive. So even though I said the positive, I have to spell out the negative. And if otherwise, the Tanai is no good. And according to Rabbi Chanina, no. Mechlal Hein Ata Shomei Alav. From the positive statement, the deduction is there and obvious and present, and everyone understands. And let's start with the Gemara. I'm just going to make one more point. These are just essential points to make, and then we'll start with the Gemara. And that is, and what if there's a failure of Tanai Kafel? So Rashi says in the Mishnah, we did the Rashi yesterday, I'm just reviewing. Rashi says, if there's a failure of Tanai Kafel, the mice is still there. Meaning the only thing you lose is a Tanai, you don't lose a Maisa. Meaning, had Moshe Rabbeinu not made the correct Tanai, had he not conditioned correctly, so that means you only lose a condition. You don't lose a Maisa. So, had Moshe, according to Rav Meir, had Moshe had a failure of Tanai Kafel, so that only means now the Tanai is gone. They're going to get Eretz Gilad. Okay, that's a generally important point to understand regarding Tanai Kafel. A failure of the Tanai is not a failure of the Maisa. It's just a failure of the Tanai.
It's not Maisa, because he's the one who established the rule. Talking about
whatever. Correct. Whoever has to follow through with the Tanai. Right? Rashi in the Mishnah yesterday said, we learned yesterday, says, let's say, for example, the man says to the woman, I'll give you a get, but on the condition that you give me 200 zuz. But he doesn't do Tanai Kafel. And he gives her the get. The get's valid. The only thing you lose now is the Tanai. She doesn't have to pay the 200 zuz if he does not condition correctly. Okay, so that's, again, just another basic point regarding this discussion of Tanai Kafel. We start with the Gemara, Shapir Kamalei Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Rav Meir. Now, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel had a great retort back to Rav Meir. If you remember back in the Mishnah, they were reading carefully the Psukim in Bamidbar regarding the negotiation. So, So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said, don't learn anything out from B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven. Why? Because had Moshe not said anything to them, and yes, you can make implications, Mechla Hein Atah Shomei Alav, but here's the story. Had Moshe not repeated anything, I might have thought that they would have gotten nothing. Not Eretz Canaan, not Eretz Gilad, nothing. And so therefore, what Moshe Rabbeinu had to therefore do was explain to them, look, if you don't come in with us, you'll still get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so Rabbi Chanina's position is that case is different because it was necessary. So Amlecha Rav Meir, so to which the Gemara says, yeah, but Rav Meir will say the following. Look, if the only thing the Torah was trying... had it not been for Tanai Kafel, so the Torah could have just gotten away by saying im lo yavru v'nochsu b'sochachem, meaning, and that would have been enough clarification, because that would have indicated if you don't go in with us and you don't help us conquer achiza, you'll still get something. You'll still get a portion. But then Moshe Rabbeinu went out of his way to say Be'eretz Canaan. Now that's superfluous, because where else do you think you're going to get portion? You're going to get an Eretz Canaan. That's superfluous. And what do we learn out from that extra? Lamali Shema Minah L'Tanai Kafel Hu Da'asa. That's coming in for the purpose of Tanai Kafel. Now V'Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Now as far as Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is concerned, what's his position? Ilo Kasev Rachmanu Be'eretz Canaan. Had the Torah not said Be'eretz Canaan, Hava Aminu V'Nochsu B'Sochem Be'eretz Gilad. I might have thought, you know what? Here's what's going to happen. You'll come in and you'll help us conquer, so you'll get the entirety of Eretz Galad, all of it. Okay. Now, again, according to Rabbi Chanina, Lechla Heina Tashmei Alav. Now, the implication is that if you don't come in, you're not going to get it. But I might have thought that if you don't go in, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get Eretz Galad. You're not going to get I might have thought, V'nochsu b'sochem b'Eretz Galad, aval b'Eretz Kanan, klal lo. You'll get nothing of Eretz Yisrael. Now, for Rameir, now as far as Rameir is concerned, b'sochachem kol hecha de'islechu mashma. No, the word b'sochachem already gives the indication that you're going to get something in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning you will not, even if you don't come in with us, you will not be precluded from Eretz Yisrael. So the truth of the matter is, Eretz Yisrael is already encrypted in the Pesukim. What is the Eretz Kanan coming to teach me? The halacha of Sinai Kafel. Okay, so where do we stand right now? So once again, Machlokus, Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina, whether or not the Torah by B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuben is teaching us this principle of Tanai Kafel. According to Rav Meir, it is. And according to Rav Meir, how do we know that? Because of the extra words Eretz Kanan. Meaning, had it not been for Eretz Kanan, for the words Eretz Kanan, so then according to Rav Meir, I would not have deduced the negative from the positive, and the without the words, let's get this straight. I'm sorry, I confused myself. Without the words Eretz Kanan, so then those words are extra. Without them, the Torah could have just simply said, "Im lo yavru v'nochsu b'sochem." If you don't come in, so then you're not going to get Eretz Galah, but you still get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. And then, why did the words Eretz Kanan need to be stated? Because, according to Rav Meir, this is the source in the Torah that teaches us that had he not said the word Eretz Kanan, the Tanai would have not been there good at all. It's there to totally validate the Tanai. Without it, the Tanai is not good. And according to Rabbi Chanina, no. The words Eretz Kanan are there coming to teach me that no, the Tanai would have been a fine Tanai. What I would have thought, however, is that without the words Eretz Kanan, what B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven were looking at was a total loss of land. Meaning they wouldn't have gotten land in Eretz Yisrael, and they also would not have gotten land in Eretz Galad. The Eretz Kanan is coming to teach me that even if they don't come in and even if they don't help conquer, they're still going to get something in Eretz Kanan. Okay, so Adkan, so now that is the machlokes between Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina in terms of whether or not the psukim by B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven can in fact set the precedent of whether we learn out Tanai Kafel. The Gemara continues, Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Okay. Amar Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, mashal amah hadavar domen. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, let me give you a mashal. Now this part's going to be a little tricky, but we'll try, and we'll try our best. Let's give an analogy. Rabbi Chanina says to us, so I can help you understand my position. So a man is giving over his properties to his children. Now over here, obviously in the mashal, the man obviously here is Moshe Rabbeinu, and the children are Bnei Yisrael. Amar ploni bini yirashad ploni, so ploni bini yirashad ploni. Now I have two pieces of property, and so for two of my children, I'm going to dedicate these two pieces of property. Now again, without him saying anything, obviously there would be a equitable division. Let's leave Bechor out of this just to make this simple. There would have been an equitable division of all of his properties to all of his children. But basically now, he's coming to the follow. I'm leaving you this, I'm leaving you this. Look, here are my first two fields. You're going to go to sons 1 and 2. Okay, now, uploni b'ni yitim asayim zuz. Now, as far as my third son is concerned, if you give me 200 zuz, v'yorishad uplonis. So then you're going to be able to inherit a third land. In other words, I'm going to preclude you, my third son, from lands 1 and 2, and I will grant you a third land, but only on the condition that you give me 200 zuz. V'im lav, v'im lo yitain. Now, if you don't give me the money, yirish emechav b'shar nechasim. So then you're going to get a regular equitable division of the original two lands. Okay. Now, that is the mashal. Now, in the nimshal is pretty obvious. Meaning, in the nimshal, the man over here is Moshe Rabbeinu. The land over here, the two lands are Eretz Yisrael. The third land over here is Eretz Gilad, it's Eivor HaYarden. And basically, here's how the negotiation is going out in the mashal. Basically, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, if you give me 200 zuz, but in the nimshal, what that means is, if you go in over and help us conquer Eretz Canaan, and help us to defeat the Canaanim, so then you'll get this third land. Meaning all of this land will belong to you. And if you don't, give me 200 zoz. Meaning, if you don't help us conquer, so then you get none of that third land. I don't know where it's going. Don't ask me. It's just kind of disappear. That part I'm not clear about. But you're not going to get any of the third land. But what you will get, however, is your normal equitable division of these two lands. Okay. Now, mi garm lo liyirashim echav v'shanachasim kfeilu garm lo. Now, what allowed the third son to get some of those two lands, it is only the kfeila. Meaning, without the kfeila, they would have gotten none of it. Okay. So, that is the that's the Braisa giving us a mashal to help us understand Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. But now the Gemara points out that instead of providing understanding, it actually provides confusion. Why? Because halodamia mashal masnisin. Because if you notice and you read carefully, you'll notice that the implication of the Braisa is much different than the implication of the Mishnah. Hasim ketani yesh b'mashma shafilu b'eretz kanan lo yinchalo ama kfeila l'eretz gilad nami mahani. As opposed to the Mishnah, where the what is the repetition serving to do? The repetition serving to do is that you're not going to get Eretz Canaan, so and you're not going to get Eretz Galat as well. And v'hachek tanimi garmlo lira shemachav v'sharnachasim kfeila garmlo. As opposed to the Braisa, where what does the repetition do? Ama kfeila l'sharnachasim hu dekamahani, where the kfeila is there to help with the sharnachasim with the other two properties, meaning Eretz Yisrael. That is the purpose of the kfeila. So basically, what comes out now is that according to Rabbi Chanina, remember, this is an entire discussion within Shitas Rabbi Chanina, where according to Rabbi Chanina, Michlal Heina Tashmei Alav, where if you say the positive, the negative is deduced. Now, what is the purpose of Moshe repeating where according to Rabbi Chanina, there's no need for repetition? You know what the negative is going to be just based on the fact that the positive was said. So what is the purpose of repetition? So now what comes out are competing points made by the Mishnah and by the Braisa. It sounds like from the Braisa, the whole part of repetition was to tell us just specific to Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, I might have thought without the repetition, you're not getting Eretz Yisrael. There, it's coming to teach me that, no, you're going to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Whereas opposed to the Mishnah, the part of repetition is you're not going to you're not going to get anything not Eretz Galad, not Eretz Yisrael as well. So the Gemara says, Lo kasha amekame denei malei Rabbi Meir v'nochsu, halabasa denei malei Rabbi Meir v'nochsu. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you what. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel had a small change of position based on his dialogue with Rabbi Meir. Meaning, because what did he originally think? Back in the Mishnah, before he dialogued with Rabbi Meir, so he originally thought that the entire negative statement of Moshe Rabbeinu was there, according to Rabbi Meir, just to teach me about Tanai Kafel. And to that, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says, no, you're wrong. The whole statement is not there to teach me about Tanai Kafel. It's there to just simply tell me that I would have known that a negative based on the positive statement. It's just there to tell me that the negative statement is, and if you don't go in, you're still going to get something. In other words, because he thought that the entire negative statement was there as was totally superfluous. Now, what comes out after the dialogue is he then understands that according to Rav Meir, the entire negative statement of Moshe Rabbeinu was not for purpose of Tanai Kafel, because im lo yavru v'nochsu b'sochechem is necessary. It's necessary to teach me that I might have thought they would have gotten nothing, and Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, no, even if you don't go in and no, you don't help us conquer, you're still going to get a little bit of Eretz Yisrael, meaning you'll get your equitable distribution of Eretz Yisrael. Now, Eretz Canaan, that's coming in for Tanai Kafel. And for that, Rabbi Chanina said, no, even that's not coming in. It's only those words of Eretz Canaan which are coming to teach me that if you don't come in with us, you're still going to get a portion of Eretz Canaan. Meaning nothing about Eretz Galad, but you're going to get a portion of Eretz Canaan. So it's only because he understood that it wasn't the entire negative statement of Moshe Rabbeinu was there for Tanai Kafel. Only the last words of Eretz Canaan. That's why Rabbi Chanina shifted a little bit in terms of understanding what was the purpose of the negative statement of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, and Adkan, and that takes us to the end of the discussion between Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina regarding whether or not B'nei Gad, B'nei Reuven can become a source for this idea of Tanai Kafel. What do we have so far? We have right now a basic machlokas tanayim, whether or not there is a requirement of tanai kafel. Reb Meir says there is, and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says there's no need for tanai kafel. And again, at the core of this debate is a question of mechorhein atashamei alav. Can I deduce the negative from the positive? Reb Meir says you cannot. There's no deduction made. If you want to state a condition, you have to verbalize the negative and the positive. The negative by itself is insufficient. And Rabbi Chanina says no. From the positive you learn out the negative. Okay. Adkan, that is the machlokus between these Tanayim. Now what the Gemara is going to do is take us through a tour of Chumash. Not a lengthy tour, but a number of times in the Torah where the Torah seems to go out of its way to say both the positive and the negative. And that bodes well for Rabbi Meir. And the Gemara now is going to ask, according to Rabbi Chanina, why do we need these repetitions in the Torah? So here we go, a number of examples. Number one, Bishlama le Rabbi Meir, Hainu Dichsiv, Im Tetiv Seisvim, Lo Tetiv Lefetach Chatas Ravetz. According to Rabbi Meir, the following is excellent. After Cain kills Hevel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes over to Cain and gives him the first Musar, the first Musar Shmuz that was given in the history of mankind. And that was, if you do good, then that's great. Im Teitiv Seis. So then you're going to get reward. And Im Lo Seitiv, however, if you're not good, Lefetach HaTas Raveitz. So then the Yetzirah is crouching there by the door. So there's a Hain and there's a Lav. So Ella Rabbi Chanina Lamali, but according to Rabbi Chanina, or couldn't the Musar Shmuz just simply been, listen, if you're good, you're going to get rewarded. Dot, dot, dot. And then, according to Rabbi Chanina, there doesn't need to be any more explication. So, Sakadat Chamina, Imtetiv Agreim, Lo Tetiv Lo Agreim, Lo Dina. No, because if we just had the words Imtetiv, I might have thought you're going to get Schar, and you're not, sorry, if you're good, you're going to get schar. And if you're not good, well, you're not going to get schar, but you're not going to get punished. Total, just one second. Total neutrality. Just nothing. So kamash malan, so that's what the Torah has to tell me. The Torah has to tell me, no, that if you're not good, so you're going to get din. You'll get punished, yes.
It's an important nuance. It's not that they're doing negative. They're just not doing positive.
That's what it's saying. No, it's saying that even if you do negative... The point is that if you're...
You're not better yourself. That means maybe you're doing nothing. You're lying in bed.
I don't agree. I think the Gemara is saying over here is that imlotative, meaning if you're not good, so the havamina would have been without the negative statement is that you're not going to get rewarded, you're not going to get punished. In other words, neutrality, total neutrality. And kamash malan, the chiddush is no. You have to. You're going to get punished. So now we are moving ahead forward to Avraham speaking to Eliezer, and he says to Eliezer, "Look, you got to follow my instructions carefully, and if you do exactly what I say, great. And if and azti nakem alasi." And you will be free and clear from my curse. Now, Ella Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel lamali. But according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, it's redundant. Meaning, if Eliezer is making a shvua, already that is an indication that if I don't follow the instruction, so then I'm going to be in trouble. So it's Ritzak Dar Chamina Hecha Denichal Lididav Velo Nichal Lididhu. Well, let's say Eliezer just needs clarification. Let's say I go over there. She wants to come back, but her parents don't want her to come back. So, Maisi Bakar Chayhu, so should I bring her back against her will? Against, I should say rather, their will. So, Kamash Malan, Im Lo Sovehi Sham. I'm sorry, Kamash Malan. So that's the Chiddush. Meaning that the necessity of repetition over there, according to Rabbi Chanina, is just to tell me, what if we have an event where she wants to come back, but they don't want her to come back? So there... what Avraham needs to explicate is no, don't bring it back. Now, im lo sova isha lamali. Now, what about the fact that the Torah seems to be again repetitive? And if she doesn't want to come back, so then you're free and clear. So it's the rechel again. That's also necessary, even according to Rabbi Chanina. Let's say the family is perfectly fine with this marriage, and she doesn't want to come. So nicely balkarcha, I might have thought that we should bring her against her will, kamash malan. So that's the chiddush. The chiddush is that we do not bring her against her will. Now, from this gemara, by the way, just as an interesting aside, how old is Rivka at this point in time? Because it sounds like from the gemara that she has some consent. Now, the havamina is that we should ignore her consent. That's a havamina, but there is some consent. Now, consent requires das. So if that's true, then we're looking at Rivka here at a little bit older than 3 years of age. So, okay, so just an interesting aside where we're talking about Rivka's consent. Okay. Now, we move ahead in Chumash, and now we're at the end of Sefer Vayikra, where the Torah there says, if you listen to me and if you don't listen to me. So according to Rav Meir, right, exactly. The Torah has to go over both sides, because Michal Hain Iatashame Alav. That's perfect. But Ella Rabbi Chanin Megam Leolam Ali. But why do I need it? According to Rabbi Chanin, it's the Rech Sakadat Chamina Im Bechukos Aitalechu Bracha. So once again, the Havamina would have been like this: if you follow my Chukos, so then you're going to get Bracha. And Im Bechukos Aitimatsu. Now, let's say you don't follow Lo Bracha Velo Klala. Had the Torah not said anything, I would have thought once again we're at the point of neutrality. You're not going to get Bracha. You're not going to get Klala. You'll get, I don't know, nothing. I guess. I mean, whatever, some point in between. So kamash malan, so the chiddush is that no, that if you don't follow, so klala. So bisham l'rav meir hayne dichsiv im tove ushmatem im timanu umirisem. So now we're way ahead and we're beyond chumash, we're now a Navi, in the first parak of Yeshayahu, where there the Navi says that if you follow and you listen, so good things will happen. And if you reject and you rebel, bad things are going to happen. So again, according to Rav Meir, yes, we spelled out both, because Michlah Lav, Michlah Hain, Iyatashame Alav. Ella Rabbi Chanina Begam Leolam Ali, but according to Rabbi Chanina, what's the need? It's Dirk Sakadach Aminim Tova Tova, Vim Timanelo Tova Velo Ra. And again, it's the same Havamina. If you follow, good, and if you don't follow, and the Torah would have said nothing, neutrality. So Kamash Malan, so the Chiddush is that you need both. Yeah, that you need both sides. Now, my cherev tochlu. Now, as long as we're here in Yeshayahu, the Gemara wants to know what exactly does that mean that the oath is over cherev. It's over a sword. You're going to eat the sword. What does that mean? Amarava milcha galina nahama desari akisha ubatzlei. So Rava says that over there, the consumption of the sword is in terms of really bad food. Salty bread made out of barley. The bread is really hard. It's stale. Onions. Amar mar pas parani chareva b'melach. If you have inferior bread baked in an oven, together with salt, together with onions, together with onions, kashim laguf kecharevos. It's bad like the body, as if swords were going into the body. Okay, so just the Gemara spent a couple of lines explaining what does that mean. You're eating the sword. Bishlam Rabbi Chanina Ben Gamliel Hainu Dichsiv Im Lo Shachav Isho Sach V'Im Lo Satis Tumatachis Isheich Hinaki. Well, here we go. Now we're moving back. We're back now in the parsha of Naso. We're by Sota, and here we go. A classic discussion. The Gemara has this discussion already a couple of times. But how is this going to work out according to Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Meir? Actually, here for the first time, we have something working out well for Rabbi Chanina, where the Torah says, if you were good and you did not sleep with another man and you did not deviate while you were with your husband, he naki, you will be free and clear. Okay, now that is the positive. Now the obvious negative implication is going to be, and if you were not good and you did deviate, so then bad things are going to happen. So according to Rabbi Chanina, that works out great. But Ella Rav Meir hinakimi baile. But according to Rav Meir, where is in this pasuk, where is the negative ramification? Because according to Rav Meir, Michlal Hain I Atashame Alav, and the Torah should have went out of its way to say that you're going to suffer if you in fact deviated. And the Torah needs to say that according to Rav Meir. I'm Rabbi Tanchum hinakiksiv. So Rabbi Tanchum says, yeah, but that is why the Torah specified and said the word hinaki, because the hey and the ches, two guttural letters of the Torah, are interchangeable, and the hinaki can also be understood as chinki, from the word chenek, which means that you will suffer chenek if in fact you deviated, which parenthetically makes perfect sense.
Because,
If the hay and the ches, they're guttural. So, and actually makes perfect sense in that a woman is a mezanis, and a shesish is subject to the punishment of chenek. Okay, so Bishlam Rameir Hainu Dichsiv Hinaki Ella Rabbi Chanina Ben Gamliel Lamali. So the Gemara says now actually works out well. In fact, it works out so well, we're just going to flip the question back on Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina, why did the Torah have to use such a strange language of Hinaki, which also gives us the implication of Chinki? And again, the Havamina of the Gemara says now, just the Gemara is repeating the same point, just in a different context. I might have thought, according to Rabbi Chanina, that there would be once again a position of neutrality, where if she did deviate and the Torah not spelled out the punishment, so then I would have thought, look, what you did is wrong, but you're not going to get punished. In other words, it was wrong. It was an Isser, but you're not going to get punished. El Isser Ba'amah. It's just that you violate an Isser in the Torah, which obviously is not good, but there's no punishment per se. Kamash Malan, that's why the Torah has to spell it out, and the Torah has to say, Hinaki, with the double entendre of you'll be free and clear, and you'll be choked if, in fact, you deviated. Bishlam l'Rav Meir Hainu Dichsiv Hu Yischata Bo B'Yam HaShishi V'Yam HaShvi Yitzaher V'Im Lo Yischata V'Chule V'Chule. The Torah says that when you receive the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma, you have to do so on day 3 and 7, and the Torah actually says both the positive and the negative. If you sprinkle on day 3 and 7, you'll become pure, and if you don't sprinkle on day 3 and 7, you will not be pure, and according to Rav Meir, that's perfect. And what if you're Rabbi Chanina? Ella Rabbi Chanina Ben Gamliel Lamali, it's Rech Sakadat Chamina. And again, the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Chanina, I'll tell you why there's a necessity. So, Mitzvah Zazah B'Shlishi V'Shvi, really the mitzvah to comply with the positive commandment of the Torah, you have to do it on day 3 and 7. And now, if you do it on one of those days, so you did get a Hazah. You lacked a mitzvah, it's a bittul asay. You just simply ignore the positive commandment, but in terms of the effectiveness, one hazah is sufficient. So kamash malan. So that's why the Torah has to go out of its way and tell me that no, you need two hazahs. V'hiza Torah alatam abiyam hashishi v'yam hashvi lamali. And now the Gemara is, as long as the Gemara is here, the Gemara says, let's just get a little further clarification. Why does the Torah have to then repeat and say that he's going to sprinkle on day 3 and 7 when we know that already? Lamali, it's rechzakadach amin hashish lamute shenu shvi lamute shish. I might have thought like this. Look, I might have thought that I can understand how day 3 cannot be day 2, because that's one day too early. And I can also understand how day 7 should not be day 6, because once again, that's one day too early. However, but let's imagine, however, that he gets sprinkled on day 3 and day 8. A havamina would have been, that's fine. Why? Because consider that now actually you're not getting less tahara, you're getting more tahara. Meaning the tahara process is a 7-day process. I might have thought tahavamina. I might have thought that if I sprinkle not instead of day 7, day 8, so I basically turned it into an 8-day tahara process. That's a longer tahara process. I might have thought that should have been good. So Hamashabidami, I might have thought that's good, Kamash Malan. The Chiddush is, that's not good. Meaning that's why the Torah has to specify day 3 and 7. We already know it excludes days 2 and 6. It also includes days 3 and 8 as well. And finally, v'chitom yom hashvi lamali. And then the Torah once again repeats and says that you're going to sprinkle on day 7, which at this point in time now the Torah has told us not only once but twice already. So why a third time does the Torah have to go out of its way to say and you're going to sprinkle on day 7? It's tzirchak adat chamina. Once again, the Gemara says, I might have thought, hani mili, yes, it's true, but lekachim aval lechuma bechad namisage kamash malan. I might have thought that if I received just but one sprinkle, so even though, as we already pointed out, you're not going to be tahor, but maybe you'll have a little bit of tahara. Meaning, let's say, for example, you're a kohen. So, already by the first sprinkling, I know I can't eat karbanos, but maybe I can eat truma. Truma, which has a relative to kachim, has less kedusha, so I might have thought that I could eat truma. So that's the havamina. I mean, the maskan is no. That, and you are, there is no degree of tahara until you get sprinkled on day 3 and on day 7 as well. That's the chiddush. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya regarding tonight kafal. Again, at the root of this machlokas between Rameir and Rabbi Chanina is whether or not mechlahein atashamei alav. Rameir says mechlahein I atashamei alav. Rabbi Chanina says mechlahein atashamei alav. The Gemara, the last Amud of Gemara, took us through a half dozen examples throughout the Chumash, one in Navi, one in Yeshayahu, in terms of where the Torah sometimes, most of the time, repeats both positive and negative. Sometimes only says the positive, doesn't say the negative, and the Gemara then has to defend both the position of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Chanina, and that's what we did for the last Amud. And the Rambam follows like Rabbi Meir, that there is a requirement of Tanai Kafel. Okay. Let's continue. We are on the Mishnah on Samach Beis Amin Alf. Amikasha the Isha va'amar kasev ra'isi shehi kohenes va'arehi levia. Levia va'arehi kohenes. Aniyah va'arehi ashir, ashir va'arehi aniyah. Harei zem mekudeshes mimnei shalo hitasa. Let's say after the marriage, after the Kiddushin, the man says, you know, I thought she was a Kohenis, meanwhile she was a Levia. I thought she was a Levia, meanwhile she's a Kohenis. I thought she was rich, and meanwhile she was poor. And I thought she was poor, and meanwhile she's rich. And in all those cases, says the Mishnah, the Kiddushin is a valid Kiddushin. Why? Because she didn't lie to him. It was a constructed idea that he formed in his own head. And just... Right, exactly, an assumption. And just because... he thought that does not mean he gets to claim a mekach taos. A mekach taos is only when she provides a misperception regarding herself, or to say it simply, she lies about herself. So then that would be what's called a mekach taos. But over here, all this was formulated in his own head. He created the assumption. Therefore, the kedushin is going to be a valid kedushin.
What would be the avamin of the person who is she rich? What would be the avamin of that?
That's easy. I don't think.
Why?
No, because
if she thought it was rich and she's poor, okay, I can understand.
I would say very simply upkeep, high maintenance.
Oh, I mean, she's
rich. Okay. Still? Okay. So we're gonna prognosticate, we're gonna forecast a little bit into the future. Right now I understand that the marriage cannot take effect because I understand I'm not Jewish. No problem. I plan to convert. Or the problem right now is you're not Jewish. No problem. You plan to convert. Let's do the Kiddushin now on the future that you will convert. Now, we're not discussing right now. Please understand. Our discussion over here is a really clinical discussion of whether the Kiddushin is valid or not valid. The Gemara over here is not having any kind of discussion whatsoever as terms of whether or not it's prudent, it's not prudent, it's recommended, it's not recommended. The Gemara's discussion over here is super clinical. It's just a discussion of, can we do the Kiddushin now on a future consideration? Okay, and you know where we're headed. We're headed to the issue of Davar Shalola Bala Ola. So the Mishnah says that I'm going to be Mekadesh you after let's do the Kiddushin now, and it will be effective after I convert, or after you convert, or after I'm freed, or after you're freed. Meaning freedom over here, we're obviously talking about a Eved Kanani, a Shifcha Kananis. La'acher she'amus ba'alech, or la'acher she'tamus achosech. Or let's say, let's do the Kedusha now, and now the small problem is that you're a married woman. Obviously, it's not going to be effective now, you're a married woman, but we're going to anticipate the death of your husband, and the Kedusha should kick in right after your husband died. I'm sure that plays very well in the current marriage that she's in. Or sisters, meaning that he gives the kesef kedushin to his sister, right? Remember, by Arayos, once an erva, always an erva, with the one notable exception of sisters. You're allowed to marry your wife's sister after she dies. So... Right, correct. It would be difficult after you die, right? Nearly impossible. But after she dies, you're allowed to marry the sister. That's the only erva where permission is granted post-mortem. So what you do is you give kesef kedushin to your sister-in-law. And then you say, look, in the anticipation that your sister, my wife, dies, then the kedushin should kick in. So, right? It's a reservation, yeah, that's it. Putting... Perfect. Very good. So, or just one more scenario. All these are basically the same idea. Or let's say a woman right now is a shomer yavam, but we all know, or we all think, that the yavam has no interest in doing the mitzvah of yibum, and he's going to do chalitza to her. And again, I just want to get in there first because great girl, and you know, and I'd like to marry her. So I'm going to give her the money now, the kesef kedusha now, and I'll say, look, obviously you're a shomer yavam. You're right, the kedushin is not going to work right now. But what I'm going to do is I'm putting in my reservation, and then after the chalitza, the kedushin should kick in. Eino mikudeshes. In every one of these cases, the kedushin is not a valid kedushin. Rashi, right here in the Mishnah, writes, "Da'avli dvarim shlo ba'la olam va'achshav ein biyadul kacha." Right now, this is the most critical component to this entire discussion: control. He's not in a position of control. He cannot cause any of these things to happen. Even the Geirus, by the way, which is interesting. But in other words, he's not in a position where he can just simply make any of these things happen, and it's a lack of control, and therefore the Kedushin is not a valid Kedushin because it's a Davar Shelo Bala Olam. Yes, sir?
Any Tanai, is it the Bar Shema
Ba'olam? Any Tanai?
Not in the world yet. No.
Let me see if I can separate the two issues. In a Tanai, so right now I have the ability to marry you. I have the ability to give you a get. I'm just throwing in a provision.
You have a choice.
Right, and now in the provision, I'm giving you the get right now, but with a condition. The condition can be a time condition. It can be a money condition. I'm throwing in a condition. But right now, I could do it right now. I'm just going to throw in a condition so that we are going to make this marriage or divorce contingent on the condition. Here, I can't even do this right now. I can't marry you right now. You're a married woman.
But you
have to be able to do it right now. And I can't. You're a married woman. And right now, short of killing your husband, I shouldn't have even said that, but short of that, I'm not in a position of doing this right now. And since I'm not in a position of doing it right now, I can't even reserve it for later as well. I can't do it now with the effect of occurring later. It can't happen. And let's say, talk about putting in a reservation, right? Your wife is pregnant, great. And if giving birth to a nekeva, to a female, so I want to be mekadesher. So the kedushin is not going to be a valid kedushin. Now the next part of the Mishnah is actually it's a Gemara. And then somehow the editors let that creep into the Mishnah. So im ha'isa isha eshes chaver mu'beres ve'hukar ubra dvarv kayamim v'im yalda nekeva mekudeshes. So we'll get to that later in the Gemara. What if she already is pregnant and the pregnancy is visible, recognizable, and then the kedushin is going to be valid? We'll talk. In other words, there is a developing fetus.
But doesn't the father have the right?
Yeah.
On the girl. So how can he?
That's not correct. But just in other words, the focus of the issue is: can I do something now with somebody that's not here in this world yet? That's the issue. That's the focus of the issue. Tanan Hasam, let's start the Gemara. We start by learning a Mishnah together. Ein Torah Minatol Shal Al Mechubar V'Im Taram Ein Chuma So Chuma. I cannot be Tarim Tal Shal Al Mechubar. Look, here's the basic rule: when I'm Mafish Maiso So Chumos, it has to be, the produce has to be disconnected from the ground, detached from the ground. If it's still connected to the ground, it's not yet chayiv in trumos and maisros. Look at Rashi on the Gemara. Mechubar einu chayiv in trumos. Dereshit degan chaksiv. The Torah says the first of your dagan, midi demidgan, and it has to be something which we're going to take the word dagan and we're going to verb it, and it has to be something which is midgan. What does that mean? Shenesaf bekri. It has to be something which is collectible. Obviously, if it's connected to the ground, you can't collect it. Hilkach lo chal shem truma ala talos shehufresh alav v'tevel hu biyad kohen. And therefore, if you try to separate min ha talos ala mechubar from something that was detached onto something that was attached, so you can't do that because that which is attached is not yet chayv in trumas and maitzros, and you can't be mafish from something which is chayv to something that's putter. And Rashi goes on to say, and that also, it means two things. It means, number one, the portion that you that was detached, that you're trying to give a shame truma on, because of attached produce, it's not going to have the shame truma. And when you give it to the Kohen, it's not truma. It also means that which is currently attached to the ground is not nitkan. It's not been corrected, because it's not yet chayiv and truma samaisos. Okay. By mine Ravasim Rav Yochanan Amar Paris Arugazu Tulushim Yiyu Truma Al Paris Arugazu Michubarim. Paris Arugazu Michubarim Yu Truma Al Paris Arugazu Tulushim Lichisha Yitlushu. So, question now is as follows. What if I make the statement, and in the statement, I'm forecasting the future? Meaning, I know there's no chalos now of truma. I know that, because I have a row which is attached to the ground. But what if in my statement I say, look, I don't want the effect to take now. The effect is only going to be after I detach it from the ground. V'nitlishu. And then I detach it from the ground. So will there be an immediate effect once I detach it from the ground? So Amalei Kol Shebiyado Lavke Mechusa Ma'isa Dami. So the Gemara says, here's the rule. And as I mentioned back in the Mishnah, the Rashi in the Mishnah, now you're going to see this rule play out. What is the effective problem in all the cases in the Mishnah? The effective problem is control. You can't do it now. And if you can't do it now, so then you can't plan for later. If, as long as it's something which is within your control right now, so then you can plan for later. So, kol shebiyado lavka mechusa ma'isa dami. As long as something is biyado. So in other words, yes, it's true, the produce is attached to the ground right now. But at any point in time, I can go over and I can detach it from the ground, and I can do it right now. So as long as it's within my control, so then I can plan for the effect to take place at a later point in time. With no problem of mechusa ma'isa. And to that, the Gemara now is going to challenge based on our Mishnah. Ha'omer li sha'arei ha'mekudesh es li'lacha she'eskai ye'lacha she'tiskai ye'lacha she'eshtach re'lacha she'eshtach re'ri l'acha she'amos ba'lech l'acha she'tamos ha'chusech l'acha she'ach l'chleis yivimech eino mekudesh es. We just ran through the entire Mishnah once again. Now, bishlam ha'kula la'biyado. Now, for so many of the cases in the Mishnah, for most of the cases in the Mishnah, I can easily understand how it's not biyado. Right? I can't marry you right now, you're a married woman. I can't marry you right now, I'm currently married to your sister. Like, those are all obvious cases of it's eino biyado. You don't have the control to do this right now. Elagir have biyado. So the Gemara says, but conversion, I'm going to marry you after I convert. Well, what do you mean? In other words, conversion is totally within my control. I can convert anytime I want. So the Gemara says, no, you cannot. So bishlam akulu labiado ala ger have biado. So ger nami labiado da amar bichia baraba amar Rav Yochanan. The Gemara now goes on to clarify. We're on the top of some base. I'm in base. Ger tzarich shlosha. When it comes to ger, you need three. You need three, meaning three people. Rashi Yisraelim shenizkakim lo lahatbilo lahodio mixas mitzvos kalos vechamus kedamar biyavamos. The Gemara back in Yavamos, we did it together. And that you have to basically give them like highlights, like here's some of the mitzvahs, here's some of the, right? It's very clear from that Gemara over there that they don't have to know everything at the point of conversion. But anyway, but basically you need a Beis Din. So you need a Beis Din. You can't just conjure up a Beis Din. In other words, that requires work and effort. It's my time, my mishpat siv bei kedin. So it's treated like din. It's like a judgment, and therefore you need a Beis Din. So it's not biyado. Mi yemer de mizdaku lei hanitlasa. Who's to say that you clap your hands and then they're just going to appear? It's not going to be that simple. Maskev la Rabbi Abba Bar Mama Elamiata Hanosim Pruta Lashiv Chasov Amar Hare Mekudeshasli La Achash Eshtachrerech Hachanami Davi Kedushin. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's say I give a Pruta to my Shifcha Kananis. Now, in her current state, I cannot marry her because you're not allowed to marry Shifcha Kananis. You can only marry a Jew. But what I say is, after I release you and free you, so I'm going to marry you. So here, biyado, he has the ability and control to do that. So shouldn't it be effective? Hachiyashu, the Gemara says, It's not a good comparison. So the Gemara says, well, you can't compare what she was and what she is. What she was a behemah. The Gemara over here, obviously using a really harsh word, but basically the idea is someone who is an eno ben bris, or in this case, a bas bris. So now she's das acheres. So
that doesn't answer the control issue.
Huh?
It doesn't answer the control issue.
It's here, right? Now Rashi over here writes we'll end today with this. Rashi over here says halchach ein mechusa meisa gadol mizeh. It's still mechusa meisa. Now, even with the Rashi, Danny, I'm still more on your side of this, because really the whole issue here is it's a function of control. He still has the control. So even though she went through a major status change from going from a Shivcha Kananis to now, at the point of Shichur, she now becomes an Isha Bas Yisrael. She's a Bas Bris. So, but still, it's still, the control issue seems to have been satisfied. So even, and Rashi clearly is addressing this, meaning Rashi is saying, well, this is Mechusa Maisa, because she's going through such a major status change. Okay, I also need more clarification on that point. I'm also a little bit stuck over here. Let's quickly recap what we've seen so far. We started today with the Mishnah of the Machlokas between Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, whether or not you need Tanai Kafel or not. Rav Meir says you do, Rabbi Chanina says you don't. At the core of this issue is whether or not we can apply the negative from the positive. Rav Meir says you cannot, Rabbi Chanina says you can. What do we do with B'nai Gad, B'nai Ruvain, and many other examples throughout Chumash and in Sefer Yeshayahu, where the Torah either seems to tell us that I need both the positive and the negative, or the Torah seems to say that we can apply one from the other? So that is what most of that daf of yesterday and today's daf revolves around. And then we start our Mishnah today discussing the topic of Davish Shalom Bala Olam, in which the Mishnah teaches us that if something is not within your control, you cannot plan and reserve for the future. It is a davar shelo bala olam, and therefore it does not work. And if something is within your control, so then it would work. So we saw in the Gemara the example by Truma, because I can separate and detach the produce from the ground at any point I want, it's not within my control, and as a result of that, I can plan for the future as well. We go back to the Mishnah, and tomorrow we'll continue analyzing a lot of the cases in our Mishnah and understanding why it's not biyado.